You just think we just, you know, whatever happens, we just shit another player. And everything's going to be perfect. All of our fans think that. You all think that. That's what you write about.
Unacceptable in all areas. Unacceptable coaching, unacceptable playing, unacceptable effort. Not what we're about.
You don't want to be here. There's a specific reason. Not really. You know, I think we did a poor job recruiting. If guys are coming in and immediately walking out the door because it was something different than what they thought it would be. And we lied to them during recruiting, or we sold them on a dream that wasn't true.
Certainly, like I said, coach our kids to do the right thing and you know, play with poise, play with confidence, play with dignity, play with class. At the same time, we're not going to take anyone's shit either.
We want to be a big, fast, dominating, aggressive, relentless football team that nobody in the SEC wants to play.
Now, that's also a second in the West, baby.
Yes, sir.
Time we're ever getting excited about second. From now on, it's first, okay?
All I want to do is fucking eat. I want you to eat. I want you to eat. I want you to want this shit. Do you want it? Do you want it? Show me.
Bunch of did it again.
Welcome into the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Breton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter, and I'm joined as always by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good, Shane. How are you still holding up after you went, 1-11 on your best bets of the week, huh?
I'm broke as a joke, Mike, but I've got bottles of bourbon heading my way. I tell you what, we're one game closer to making a bowl. I'm not winning in every department in my life, but there's some pretty good check marks coming this way.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get into all that, Shane, but let's just jump right into the action. We got a lot to cover. And, of course, we got to start with the big game out of the SEC West. LSU goes into Tuscaloosa, wins 46-41. Who in the world, Shane, would have ever thought we'd seen an LSU-Alabama game with 87 combined points that didn't go into about 32 overtimes? I mean, this is...
What a game.
This was wild. It lived up to the hype. It felt like a college football playoff game. I don't know if you got that feeling, but not saying. Again, we were saying all week Alabama's eliminated if they lost this game. I'm still kind of leaning that they are, but you know, we'll get it all into that in the weeks to come. But just main takeaways from this game for me, Shane, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the Clydesdale, he came up big. He was almost the hero of this game. Of course, Joe Burrow doing his thing, 31-39 for 393 and three touchdowns. LSU obviously jumped out to a big lead, scored 33 points in the first half, Shane. That's I believe that's never been done against a Nick Saban Alabama defense. That was incredible. But then out comes Alabama storming back. I know Tua was banged up. You know, there was opportunities for him to take off and run in this game. He clearly, that was not in the game plan. I think he could have walked in the end zone for one of these touchdowns, and he just was not willing to run. I don't think he could. That's kind of something I had been hitting at, you know, in the weeks leading up to that game. That proved to be true. But aside from just his limitations, I got even more respect for Tua Tagovailoa after this performance. I mean, this guy was a damn warrior. I don't know if you saw the clips of him after the game, Shane, but he could barely walk. And he went out there, threw 418 yards, four touchdowns, did have the bad pick there right before halftime. But, man, this was a battle of titans that lived up to it. And, I don't know, I was just blown away by just the game and the aftermath and everything with it.
You know, it's not too often that you watch a game and then at the end of it say, you know what, if these two guys played again, this team would definitely win. You know, I think if these two teams play again and a two is healthy, shit, I don't know who's going to win. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it was that good. It was that entertaining. And honestly, man, we talked about Alabama losing a shot at getting into the playoffs if they lost this thing. I don't know. I mean, this thing is a money thing too. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And this lived up. This was a fantastic ball game, and it almost seemed like it came down to who had the ball last. And Alabama made some boneheaded mistakes, but LSU did too there in the third quarter. There were some opportunities that they had to strike, and they weren't able to do it. It was just a fantastic ball game. But I'm with you. I came away from this. The running game I thought that was a surprise. Everybody was talking about the quarterbacks. I thought the running backs on both sides of the ball did fantastic. And I thought Tua, man, is an absolute beast. I mean, he is, well, for like his, he was banged up, man. Mm-hmm. And there was times down there near the goal line, you know, that I think if he was 100% Tua, he would have ran it in, or he could have got a first down. You know, there was a lot of times that he had opportunities to pull the ball down, and he just wasn't able to do it because of his health concerns. So if these guys do meet in the playoff scenario, I think we, you know, it's going to be even a better, I think it'll be even better of a game. So this was just a freaking awesome one. I'd love to see it again.
Yeah, so I mentioned it there right before half. Tua threw an interception, Shane. Thoughts on Nick Saban with a limited quarterback putting his foot on the gas? I mean, he obviously trusts Tua, but what happened was LSU was playing a zone defense. Tua threw ill-advised interception. LSU turned it into a touchdown right before half. That, you know, a lesser team, that would have killed them, because going into halftime, the score is 33-13 in LSU's favor. Thoughts on Nick Saban's aggressiveness there at the end of the first half?
You know, that one right there, Mike, you know, LSU just went up 26-13, and it just, you know, LSU was getting the ball coming out of the out of halftime. So I didn't see anything wrong with this, pushing the ball, trying to get it down the field. I mean, either defense really had trouble stopping the other one's offense. So I think there was plenty of time on the clock. I don't think that this was a bad situation, but it did. I mean, it did change the narrative when it was 33-13, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then LSU shut out in the third quarter. Shane, Alabama comes storming back in the second half. Also wanted to get your thoughts when Najee Harris punched it in for his, his second touchdown of the second half there. The score was 33-27, Alabama only down by six. I believe that was at the very beginning of the fourth quarter. You know, they got the damn Dixieland light blaring. They got the lights blinking. It looked like Alabama had all the momentum in the world. Did you have confidence that LSU would hold on after being shut out in the third quarter, come back and score 13 points in the fourth quarter? Be honest with me.
No, I didn't. I really didn't. I thought this thing was over. And I kept watching the probability, and it was hovering. You know, like sometimes I get caught watching that, and I was like, nah, yeah, you're right. There's no chance. But, dude, when he – and then I even sent that stupid tweet out talking about Alabama crumbling at about that time. There goes Devontae down the sideline for a touchdown. I'm like, oh, my God, I done put my foot in my mouth. So these two teams, man, I loved it. I loved the game. I loved that. The outcome was not expected. Obviously, I thought Bama to win this thing. And then there was times during this game I thought about Alabama's youth on defense. I felt like it was exposed. But then, you know, so there were some things, too, that showed up on LSU, you know. I don't know about you, but I think that offensive line at times was kind of garbage, don't you? I mean, Alabama at times had their way up front.
Mm-hmm. Well, in pass protection, I'd certainly agree with you. I think that's the weakness of Alabama's offensive line, but hell, their offense has been so good. I wouldn't call it, you know, it's not like it's a glaring issue. I think Alabama's outside linebackers, Anthony Jennings, I just think he's so damn good. It was just a mismatch in Alabama's favor, but mm-hmm. obviously it wasn't enough to, you know, win them the game. But, you know, going back to LSU facing that 6-point, you know, they were only up by six, but they had been up by, 30? So,
yeah.
I think that really is the most impressive thing for me coming out of this game, the fact that, you know, there have been teams that have jumped on Alabama. It doesn't happen rarely, but mm-hmm. or it doesn't happen very often, but teams have been known to jump out on Alabama, and then Alabama just comes back storming back, and it's just, you know, you never see them again. They're in the rearview mirror. So I think it just the fact that LSU was able to not only hold on but push it in the fourth quarter, stayed aggressive, that's been the mantra all season. It would have been very easy for them to kind of get conservative, go into shell. That's what the Ed Orgeron we knew coming into this season would have done.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a damn new day at LSU, Shane, and I just give the Tigers all the credit in the world. And one other thing I wanted to mention, Shane, your guy here, the Clydesdale, I know we love Joe Burrow. I think he won the Heisman Trophy on Saturday night with his performance on the road in Tuscaloosa. But I don't know about you, Shane, but I do not think that LSU wins this game without the Clydesdale. 20 rushes, 103 yards, 3 rushing touchdowns, 9 catches, 77 yards receiving, and another touchdown. I mean, that guy, he was the star of the game for me.
Absolutely. And I saw this in the spring game, man. He just was everywhere. Anywhere that Joe wanted to throw, he was in the vicinity. It felt like, you know, he's just a safety blanket, a safety net, if you will. And so when Joe's getting a lot of pressure, he's always got him there. It kind of, I mean, it's just like the Saints, man. I know I keep saying Sproles, but it's like the Kamara role now, you know. It's just he's there. He's got a clock in his head. He blocks as long as, you know, and as soon as it gets that, he's out into the flats, and he'll catch a pass for him and make something out of nothing. So very, very impressive. And without him, no, I don't think LSU wins this game. But let me ask you, since we're playing ifs, if Tua was 100%, do you think Alabama would have won this game?
Yeah, probably. I think they would have, given the fact that it was at home and everything. But I don't know, I still would favor, even if Tua 100% on a neutral field, let's say in a college football playoff game, I think I'm still favoring LSU because I like their defense a little bit better than Alabama. Still elite players all over the field, but I think I still give the slight edge to LSU. I thought, you know, for as much praise as Derek Stingley gets, I don't want to say he got exposed because he was playing against guys that are going to be in the NFL next year at receiver. Yeah. But I thought Derek Stingley really got humbled. He got taken advantage of a couple times in this game. And I think LSU's really got to work with him to make sure that that doesn't happen again. And I'm not sure that you take advantage of a player that good once again, but I think it would be a little bit different story there.
Yeah, I got you. And I tell you, man, Najee's looking better too. It just seems like Alabama's offense is getting better. I'm more balanced, I guess you would say, you know. Harris was really running hard, and I think if Tua were healthy, I think it would be a different ball game, especially being at home. But neutral site, again, I think it's a coin toss type of game, and that's why I loved it so much, because I didn't know what the heck was going to happen. And it was, you know, I don't have 2 cents in this game. You know what I'm saying? And I was excited about it all week long, and then watching it, it just felt like I was watching one of the greatest games to ever be played, dude. That's just how big this thing was, and I was just glad. I was glad to watch it, and glad the outcome came out unexpected. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's kick it over to Coach O'Shane after the game. You know, he kind of revealed, you know, it's easy to say this in hindsight, but I'm sure he's telling the truth here about telling his team he knew they were going to win this game on finally getting that Alabama monkey off his back. That's, you know, this is the biggest thing that's not only holding him back, but the entire LSU program for going back to 2011. And then he kind of doubles down, says this won't be the last time either. And then on the fact that the Tigers still have a lot to play for.
You know what? When I got on the plane coming here, I felt like, you know what? We got it. We finally got the tools that we need. We finally got the players that we need. We finally got the coaching staff that we need to beat these guys. I told that to Steve Ensminger sitting on side of him. I told that to Greg McMahon. And I feel with the combination of going to the spread offense, keeping Dave Aranda, Steve Ensminger, Joe Brady, Greg McMahon, and obviously the recruiting, those great receivers that we had, and our defense have gotten better. So, and then you know, I think Joe Burrow, you know, just to have a championship team, you need to have a championship quarterback. So I felt like we had it. And obviously I knew we had to do it, but we did it. I told them on Monday, you're the better football team. I never told this team that going into Alabama. I said, we are going to win the football game. We got to take care of business. And we have to take care of practice today. We're going to block out the noise. We're going to take care of practice. But we get on that plane, and we're going to beat Alabama. And I told them, I do believe you're the best football team. That's the first time I've told them that. Yeah. Yeah, it's never going to be about me. I'm so happy for that team right there and that coaching staff in the state of Louisiana. Hell, I might be able to go to the 7-Eleven now and get me a Monster or a Red Bull And they will have to tell me, Coach O, you got to beat those guys, you know. I'm going to tell them I'll beat them. You watch the game.
This rivalry the past few years consumed the state, consumed the fan base. Just what's your message now that you finally snapped that streak?
This won't be the first. It won't be the last. We're coming.
Coach.
We're coming. This won't be the last time. We there. We're going to continue to rise. We're going to continue to make progress in this program to bring a championship back to Louisiana. We'll continue to recruit, continue to get great players, and this is not the first time we're going to beat them. I promise you that. I don't know that. You know, I told the team there will be bigger games. When we beat Alabama, there will be bigger games down the road. And obviously, we're going to look at the tape, and we're going to see where, you know, we didn't play so well in some spots. And we're going to get better. And then we're going to focus on beating Ole Miss. And then we're going to take it one game at a time and get better. This team has gotten better every game. And I want them to get better next week. Just take the next step.
All right, Shane. So I just thought those were some bold comments, particularly the, you know, we're going to beat Alabama. Won't be the last time we do it. So I like this kind of talk from Coach O. But I thought he had a really good point there at the end. I know LSU Nation is just on cloud nine at this point. But and not saying they're going to lose next week to Ole Miss. Or, you know, down the road to Texas A&M. But if that happens, it diminishes this game if they don't take care of business as the season closes.
For sure. I'm totally with you on that one. They've got to – I mean, this was a huge event, but you can't overlook any of the remaining teams because as soon as you do, you're going to drop one. And like you said, this game becomes a lot less important. So I think he's saying the right – I think he's doing the right thing. He's trying to get the recruits. He's trying to get these boys pumped up to let them know that they are the best team. I think that's what you should be doing. I think that's what Nick Saban's been doing. You know, he's been pumping them up. But, you know, I think you don't want to get any of that humble pie here the next couple of weeks. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You want to do your job. Go to the SEC championship, finish your business there. You've got bigger pictures, but you still got to take it one game at a time.
Well, so Coach O'Shane gave us kind of the PC version of that.
Yeah.
The locker room video was a little bit different.
You understand that?
Yes, sir.
We're going to beat their ass in recruiting. We're going to beat their ass every time they see us.
Okay.
You understand that?
Yes, sir.
Roll Tide, what? Fuck you.
All right, Chad, I just thought this was great. I've seen Alabama people pissed off about this. Some LSU fans also upset that this leaked. But, you know, he's just firing up his team. And if he does meet Alabama, if LSU and Alabama meet down the line, I can only imagine how many times Nick Saban's going to be playing this one in the locker room.
A lot of sound clips came from this game, after the game especially, you know. So this is one you didn't want to get out. All coaches, that's just like, you know, that one intro we got where Kirby's yelling, right. You know, the one where Muschamp's yelling. I mean, these guys, they didn't want that to get out. But that's what's going around the locker rooms of every team in the SEC right now. Mm-hmm. Now, I doubt Saban is dropping the F-bombs. He may be. I don't know, you know. But I'm sure there's a few guys in there, you know. I mean, you've seen that Scott. What's his name? Get on them commercials.
Cochran, Scott Cochran.
Has the most annoying commercials in the world. You know what I'm saying? I guarantee he's yelling and get these boys fired up before games. It happens. It even happens in high school. You know what I'm saying? So I just, you know, I'm kind of glad it got out because, you know, we like to know how the sausage is made. But then again, you know, you kind of wish it didn't because that is a sanctuary, man. That's what happens in a locker room stays in the locker room.
I just had a visualization, though, in my head, Shane. Nick Saban, we know this guy wakes up early. You know, he sits down, drinks his coffee, and eats his little Debbie's, is watching the Weather Channel. I just imagine Miss Terry be like, did you see this? And he's sitting there spitting out his coffee. Well, let's kick it over to old Saint Nick here, Shane. Nick Saban, after the game, a little bit, I don't want to say humbled. I thought he handled this pretty well, but, you know, he was facing some tough questions, including the one I asked you, Shane, on going for it at the end of the first half there. He put that on himself, on Tua's performance, on a gimpy ankle, and then on LSU and Joe Burrow. I thought Nick Saban was very complimentary of LSU's offense.
Could you talk about the decision with 26 seconds left and before half going
going for it instead of just taking a knee?
Well, you know, since the result that we got was what we got, I wish we'd have ran the ball. I wish we'd have taken a knee. You know, we had two timeouts. We were trying to throw a chunk play, and maybe if you hit a big play, and we have a lot of capability to do that, and we trusted the quarterback to make a good decision. You know, they played zone, guy broke on the ball and intercepted the ball. So, you know, based on what happened, I definitely, if I had to do over and I knew that was going to happen, we would have kneeled on the ball. But being aggressive in the game at the time, I thought that we would throw the ball down the field and give ourselves a chance to make a big play. And even if it was a bad play, it'd be no worse than a punt. So that was obviously a mistake on our part, and I take all the blame for that.
Nick, what was your expectation for Tua from a health standpoint coming in, and then how do you think he played? Was he up to 100% capability?
Well, I think he was 100%. I think obviously missing some time, missing some practice. You know, I think that, you know, he played well. He made good plays in the game. I thought his mobility was probably not 100%, but I thought he had short area quickness in pocket. Maybe he couldn't run, you know, 100%. Maybe it was 90%. I don't really know. But, you know, this was a medical decision and his decision. The docs cleared him to play. They cleared him to practice all week. He practiced all week. He didn't have any issues. And, you know, he said he could play in a game, and he wanted to play in a game, and he thought he could go out there and do his job. And I think he was a warrior in terms of what he did. And I think probably missing the practice that he missed over the last couple weeks. He may not have been quite as sharp as normal, but I thought he did a good job in the game, and I'm proud of the way he competed in the game.
Nick, obviously you knew watching on tape coming in how much Joe Burrow in particular, but that LSU offense had improved from last year. Now that you've played them, can you describe, in particular with the quarterback, how you think he's been able to make such a jump from last year to this year?
Well, I think it's the system. You know, I think it's the things that they're doing. I think it really features the players. I think he has talking about the quarterback now, Joe has a really good handle on what they're trying to do. And it's challenging to defend. And it utilizes the people that they have. And look, they have no weaknesses on offense. You know, they got a really good runner. They got a really good quarterback. They got really good receivers. They got a good offensive line. And, you know, they got a system and a scheme that's very sound and solid in terms, and they do a really good job of executing it. And I can't give them enough credit for, you know, what they do. It's nothing like what they tried to do a year ago. All right, so it's completely different. And I think it features their players, and I think their players buy into it, have confidence in it, and do a great job executing it. So I felt like that going into the game, and I certainly feel just as strongly about that now after having played them.
All right, Shane, so like I said, Nick Saban, I think he handled that well. I've seen some people kind of come out and question the fact that Tua was playing on that game, considering how bad he was limping after it. But, you know, I find it really, really hard to believe that. I know Nick Saban's the most powerful man probably in the state of Alabama, but he's not going to get a guy like Tua. He's not going to force him on the field if he doesn't want to play. I mean, I read that the whole time as Tua knew he was limited, but he wanted to be out there for his team, his fans, his coaches, everybody. I mean, he was a warrior out there, so I don't really want to hear that Nick Saban threw a guy out there that shouldn't have been out there. What are your thoughts on all that?
No, I agree. I think this came down to medical staff, Tua himself, and probably family. You know, his right. Dad's got a big role in his decision. So I'm sure that it came down to the family there, and he wanted to play. I mean, if Tua didn't feel like he could play, he wouldn't have been out there. But, I mean, he knew how big this game was for him. He knew how big this game was for the team and the whole state of Alabama. So I don't think there was any way you were going to keep him from the field. And, like I said, I have a new respect for the kid because you could tell he was really hurt. And even during the game, not just after when he's limping, but during the game, you could see that hesitation where his body or his mind wants to run, but his body just kind of like, no, you can't. You know what I'm saying? It just felt like he was fighting with himself.
Well, let me try that again. All right, Shane, let's jump to the SEC East, where we had a really thrilling night game with a lot on the line for you included, as Tennessee holds on, Shane, for a 17-13 win over Kentucky. I know we, praise Lynn Bowden the whole time here leading up to this game and for what he's been doing week in and week out here, forced to play quarterback for the Wildcats, but, newfound respect for him. He just continues to get it out, and I think Tennessee's defense is playing the best it's ever played under Jeremy Pruitt, and Kentucky still basically had their way with him in the first half. It was just so hard for Tennessee's defense to limit Bowden at times. Thoughts on this game, Shane? And the guy, I got to give you some crap here. You've been burying Garantano, Shane. He saved Tennessee. I mean, if not for Garantano in this game, Tennessee does not win this game. It's not all Garantano. I mean, Marquez Callaway showed up big. Josh Palmer, he had a hell of a game. Daniel Petulli had 19 tackles, including the game winner on the goal line. This game came down to literally the last play, basically. But I think the guy that is owed the most respect is Garantano, in concern of the fact he's only got one good arm.
Yeah. And Lynn, I think Lynn deserves a game ball too, because I mean he was that entire team, dude. I mean, it was unbelievable. Let me start with Garantano, okay? Because I have said a lot of bad things, Mike. All right, and I was biting my tongue when he came in, and there was rumblings that he was going to come in after half. I was like, oh hell, we're just giving this game away. But I'm telling you, dude, he looked fantastic. And I can't believe, I mean, even the mobility, he seemed faster. You know what I'm saying? I sent out a tweet. Do you remember that movie, Rookie of the Year, I think is what it's called, where the kid breaks his arm and they put a cast on him? And then, like, when he gets the cast off, all of a sudden he can throw, like, 150-mile-an-hour fastballs. You know what I'm saying? That's what I thought. I was like, man, what did they put in Garantano's hand, you know? So I was excited about that, man, because he was on. He was playing good. And, you know, this – and I'm going to get to Kentucky here in a second, but something my brother, your other cousin, said the other day really stood with me. I mean, stood out to me. And I've been thinking about it, and I think he's right, man. You know, Garantano has had some problems this season, and we've questioned how Pruitt – has been moving these quarterbacks around. I think that Pruitt loves Jarrett for a couple reasons. One, mobility, but I think the biggest one is game management, being able to put the offense in a better position, something that Brian's been struggling to do. However, I don't think that they're running JG out just at first because he's got some pregame jitters, man. Like, he really needs someone else to take the first few series to get his nerves down a little bit so he can see what the defense is doing. So when he goes in there, he becomes a better quarterback. And it's something that John talked about the other day, and I've seen it now in two or three games, and he's won us games coming off the bench. They joke about him being the sixth player, and that's what he's been doing. So I don't know, just something that he said. We've discussed offline, and I just saw it come in fruition this week with Kentucky. Now, as far as Kentucky, man, I'm telling you, they had a game script. I mean, it was torture to go from Alabama and LSU and 100 points of offense, and then to flip the channel over and see the 1930s wishbone going. You know, it made my eyes bleed, but it was working, man. It was working 3, 4, 7 yards at a time. And I hate to say it, but Kentucky lost this game, Mike. They made some stupid calls, and I'm not trying to blame Coach Stoops, because I think he's fantastic. But, you know, there was some times when it was fourth down and one that they decided to punt. I have no freaking we can't stop them. They were getting at least 3-4 yards every carry. I don't understand why they just didn't always go for it on fourth down. Second, I don't understand why Lynn would ever attempt to throw the ball. Didn't need to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he did throw it a pretty bad interception that it was returned for a touchdown, but then ruled that they stepped out, so they got called back. But, yeah, it was a rough 4 of 7 for 25 yards in that pick. But how about this stat, Shane? I can't think of a time where I've ever seen something like this without a ton of turnovers. But Kentucky, 64 rushes for 302 yards, time of possession, they let it 41-18, and they lost the game. Like I said, I can understand if they fumbled and lost, you know, 3 or 4 balls, but each team turned it over just once, so turnover margin was equal. But,
yeah,
it's hard to come up with ways to lose a game like that, but Kentucky managed to do it, and, you know, they had a chance to win it there at the end. I don't know, Shane, if the Kentucky coaching staff knows, you know, they don't have to snap the ball when the play clock's at one. You know, it seemed like that was definitely the game plan to shorten the game. I guess it makes sense, but in hindsight, you only scored 13 points and it all came in the first quarter. And how about, you know, it was not a big play. I mean, anytime you block a kick, it's a big play, I guess. But when Tennessee at the extra point, they blocked the extra point. Now, that turned out to be a huge in the ending of the game, because Kentucky could have just kicked a field goal to tie it late in this game if not for that blocked extra point. And, of course, the game came down to a fourth and, I don't know, what was it, 4th and 3, something like that, all on the goal line. And Tennessee just, they made the stop, and it was never even really in question. Lynn Bowden, he did not really even get close to that goal line, did he?
No, and I don't understand the Stoops comment talking about, of course, we're about to play it here, but I've also seen it from other people on Twitter that he should have pitched the ball. And, yeah, I think something could have happened, but I mean, Tennessee had that pretty much covered, it felt like, you know. I don't want to put that on Lynn, because that Lynn made a decision, and I mean, when you're running that option, you've only got a split second to decide if you're going to keep it or pitch it. And you know, he's a playmaker, and he thought he had an opportunity, but I guarantee if he would have pitched the ball, it'd have been the same outcome. I don't think they would have got in, because we just, I don't know, they're just swarmed to that play.
Yeah, and I think when he's clearly the best player Kentucky has on offense, I think you got to win or lose with the ball in his hand.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my takeaway. But, yeah, you hit on it there. Let's jump over to Jeremy Pruitt on Jarrett Garantano, continuing to come off the bench and keep on delivering for the Vols on finishing the season the right way. Remember this time last year, Shane, Tennessee was in an identical situation, 5-5. 2 games remaining. Only got to win one to go to a bowl game. Goddamn blown out in both of them. Can't let that happen again. And then on the final goal line stand, that won Tennessee the game.
What is it about Jarrett that allows him to kind of come off the bench and be sharp? I know that that's maybe not something he'd probably ever done growing up, but he seems to come in there and just kind of do his job.
Well, I don't know why he's able to do that. I mean, I think he's mature. You know, he knows what we're trying to do. Physically, he's smart. You know, he done a great job tonight. He's done a good job coming off the bench all year that we've asked him to do it. So, I mean, I just think he's a guy that you know, he wanted to play well tonight, and he did. And he prepared during the week to do that. We want to finish this year the right way for our seniors, first of all. But we still got a lot to prove, you know. Got a lot to prove. Most importantly, we need to play a complete game, which we have not even come close to yet. And we've won 4 out of the last 5. Need to learn how to play a complete game.
Time for one more.
Coach, you've been 1 minute. I'm
the field tonight. Just how were they able to come up with that last goal line stand when you needed
it? We made some good tackles right there inside the goal line. A lot of guys running to the ball. I'd been very disappointed if we didn't stop them. I mean, they wasn't going to throw it. We got more up there than they can block. We should stop them, right? You know, and our kids did what they should do. You know, they rose up and found a way to make plays there and finish the game. So some of that being on the field for 41 minutes has a lot to do with Tennessee. You know, so not take anything away from Kentucky, but we definitely didn't help ourselves on some plays.
It looked like you were going to call a timeout right before that last play. Why didn't you?
Because I was listening to our guys in the box and what the look was and whether we liked it or not, and also looking at the play clock. And you know, once we felt like we had a look, I was going to let it go. I preferred to keep the three timeouts, you know, in desperation there at the end. If we get the stop on 3rd and 5, you have a chance to try to block the punt or get a return and, you know, get the ball back in desperation mode there at the end. You know, preferred to keep the timeout, but it was more based on the look we were getting defensively and whether we had a chance to get that ball to the perimeter. I thought Lynn made a really good play. I'll never argue with Lynn, you know, with the, you know, taking it right there, and he stretched it to the perimeter. We'll probably look at it and feel like if he'd have pitched it, it would have been a foot race to the pylon and probably had a chance, but I'm not going to argue with that kid and the way he, you know, has a chance to pull the ball down and try to drive it in there and get to 1 yard. Credit them for a nice stop.
All right, Shane, so like I just said, obviously Tennessee's in the same position they were last year, and it's easy to say this, but it just feels like completely different this time around. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it felt different, man. This I tell you, when they got down there, I was like, we can't stop them. They're going to score, you know? And I was trying to think to myself, well, we got so many X amount of time to get down there and score another touchdown, you know? And but then it got to third down. I was like, wait a minute, what if we stop them, you know? And then it, man, when you talk goal line stand, I didn't imagine that would happen, especially if you watch that opening drive. I mean, that opening drive that Kentucky had for like freaking, it felt like they were on the field for 15 minutes, you know? Mm-hmm. It just felt like we never had, I don't know, just didn't feel like we had an opportunity to stop these guys. And for us to have that goal line stand, especially with that defense being on the field the entire game, is just amazing. That's a testament to those players, you know, because that was all heart there at the end. Now, that being said, you know, when we got the ball back and we had to, you know, try to get the first down, it just all of a sudden, it's like a light switch went on that Garantano can't use his left hand. You know what I'm saying? Did you notice that? Like, they're like, everybody's all of a sudden, they're like, yeah, they're definitely going to run to the left. He can't hand off to the right because he'll fumble it, you know? So then you start panicking about that. But I don't know, man. I think this game, you know, it came down to the end, but I really do think that Kentucky made mistakes prior to this. I think even right before half, I think Kentucky should have been a little bit more aggressive and instead of just taking it to halftime.
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane, we've been holding this one off. News here on Sunday.
Oh, I thought we were going to South Carolina. I was like, I'm not ready to do another apology, but we're getting there, Gamecocks.
No, even more embarrassing, Shane. Western Kentucky marches into Fayetteville, wins 45-19. Ty Story, he used to be, you know, someone that Razorback fans were not happy with. Now they love the guy, Shane, because he got rid of Chad Morris. And, man, remember we played that clip on Friday's show?
Mm-hmm.
It damn near made me flip my pick. I don't know why in the hell I didn't at that point, but it was so obvious. I mean, listen to this guy going to this game. He didn't even have any clue what he was doing. Don't want to spend a ton of time on this game because it was so It was so damn ugly. I mean, Arkansas was not even in it against a first-year coach, a first-year quarterback, transferred in from Arkansas. I mean, this is going to be one where they burn the tape and Arkansas fans forget this. But the good news is, I mean, it's just going to get better because they got talent on the roster. And now hopefully they get you can't get any worse of a coach. But thoughts on Chad Morris getting fired here on Friday, Shane? I think it had to happen.
Absolutely, man. I tell you what, I don't think Arkansas fans are that upset today. I mean, yes, you lost to Western Kentucky, you know. Here you got Ty Story finally winning a game at Fayetteville, you know. And I think they're okay because that nasty chapter in their lives are gone. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm sure Chad Morris has his pick of the litter for movers down there. I mean, they're lined around the block. You know, Christmas tree is out at the road. This, you know, he's gone. But I will say that, you know, it shouldn't have took this long. I just think
it's hard to fire a guy with less than two seasons in, but I'm not a big believer in it, but this has
There's
to be
no
done.
Progression, man. And then him blaming the players, you know, blaming the youth, blaming the players, you know. And then you've got people like Dan Skipper. Do you remember him coming out? He's playing in the NFL, just coming out talking about, you know, you can't blame the players. You got to, you know, take some sort of accountability. It's all about the coaching and development. You know, there's been absolutely no development in 2 years. You know, it's going backwards. So what do you think is going to happen the next season? I've also seen reports coming out that this locker room was divided, that there was Morris guys and the other guys. And if you don't have your locker room bought in, they're going to be working against each other, and it's not going to work on the field, you know. So, you know, he say what you want. The guy, you know, had potential. He had potential in recruiting, especially because that was his knack. But you know, he just didn't have it for a head coach. You know, he didn't have this team. He didn't have any development. Arkansas's better for it. He's gone.
Mm-hmm. Well, Shane, it wouldn't be that SEC podcast without a little Chad Morris. So we're going to give him a send off here. Comments from his final presser in Fayetteville one last time.
Unacceptable.
Coach Chad Morris.
How do I say goodbye to what we had?
I guess just given what's happened the last few weeks, any thoughts about your future with the program and the program's future?
Well, I'll tell you this. It's, you know, it's going to take some time. This is not an overnight fix, and we've seen that now for 2 years. We're all frustrated. We're all incredibly frustrated. We have a big youth movement on this team, and a lot of young guys that are contributing and going to be tremendous football players. But where we are right now with these guys, we've got some major deficiencies that we have to fix and we have to fill. And but this is not an overnight. This is not an overnight fix.
The struggles like that.
Very disappointing. Disappointing in the fact that you know, we let a team and give them credit. They came in here and but you know, for us to come in here and not be able to get off the field and have an opportunity to score some points is very disappointing. And you know, we've got to just continue we've got some deficiencies and we have to go fill them.
You got SEC Network watching. You got fans watching. And I know this is a tough time, but can you address, are you the guy for this job? And can you, we've seen very little improvement, and you got the microphone now. Can you tell our fans, are you the guy?
Absolutely. I am the guy. I am, there's no question. I knew that this was going to take some time. I knew that this was going to be a process of recruiting and developing and building and especially in this conference. I knew the strains that take place weekly in this conference and the depth that it needs to be successful. And right now we don't have that. We've got to go get that. We've got to recruit to it, and we've got to continue to develop. And right now it's unfortunate that we're playing as many young guys as we're playing, but that's the truth.
All right, Shane, that's going to be the final clip of old Chad we ever play. It's a great day for Arkansas. It's a sad day for comedy. With Chad Morris out, tight ends coach Barry Looney, the Arkansas grad, former quarterback down there, he's the interim. I don't think, I've never heard anything bad about this guy. I'm not going to trash him by any means, but I don't think he's really got a shot at winning this interim, becoming a full-time coach is what I'm trying to say, unless, they pull some stunner off and beat LSU or something. Maybe you give this guy a look, but I wanted to give just some brief thoughts, Shane, on some candidates that I think Arkansas really needs to look at. And I think I'm not trying to get, I'm speaking a little bit with my heart here, but number one guy on my list, Shane, it's got to be Mike Leach. Make that call. You know, his system is not that similar to Chad Morris, but it's not like going from the triple option to the spread. You already got the principles in place there. Mike Leach, say what you want. He's a goofball, all this. He can't recruit. I've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Year after year. Hell, I mean, the Jaguars quarterback spent 1 year with him. Now he's in the NFL. I mean, this is a guy that knows how to coach football. That's what Arkansas needs, a damn football coach. Not some gimmicky shit, not some recruiting guy. They need a football coach. I think Mike Leach is the best football coach, most successful coach that's realistic for Arkansas. Mike Norvell, the Memphis coach, Shane, that's going to be a popular name. You hear more and more. He's got to be at the top of your list. I think Mike Norvell potentially could do even better than Mike Leach at Arkansas. The only problem there, I don't know if Arkansas can get him at this point, because I think Mike Norvell, his undefeated Memphis team, is such a hot commodity. Bruce Feldman of The Athletic saying that Florida State is looking at Norvell. So maybe tough to get him, but year after year, Memphis loses assistants and Memphis remains good. They do have outstanding players, but it just seems like every year they do. That's a credit to the head coach, I think.
And then, is there any casinos down there in Seminole County? Just asking for a friend.
That may be the only holdup there, Shane. And then how about these? You're going to hear a lot of the same names, I think, until they really whittle this thing down. But as for some assistants that I really think, they may not want to go back to the Clemson tree, because obviously that was where Chad Morris made his hay there. Mm-hmm. But I think they should really look at the offensive coordinator, Tony Elliott, give him a look. And then I think even the better hire, I know they just hired an offensive coach. You know, sometimes they want to do a 180 and hire a defensive guy. Particularly in the SEC West, you're going to need some defense. If this coach hires the right offensive coordinator, I think he's going to be a hell of a head coach if and when he ever chooses to be. And that's Clemson defensive coordinator Brent Venables. Mm-hmm. I think that's a call you got to make. And then the last name on my list, Shane, I've not seen this anywhere, but I know this guy is interested in being a head coach again. He almost got the Tennessee job. I know he's a little bit older, but you want to talk about coming in here and fixing this defense. I think if you're going to hire an assistant, and I'm not saying that's necessarily what's going to happen, but I would look at Auburn defensive coordinator Kevin Steele. He's a hell of a recruiter. He's an outstanding defensive mind. If Arkansas wanted to do a 180 here and hire a defensive assistant, Kevin Steele, get in the right offensive coordinator, I think Arkansas could do really well.
Well, let me ask you, because that's the one that's floating around. Everybody wants to know, do they have an opportunity for getting Gus? Let's just say something happens. I mean, Auburn's got two doozies on the schedule. if they drop those games and for some reason, you know, it gets heated up a little bit down there mm-hmm. in Auburn, is there an opportunity that he goes to Arkansas?
You know, I don't really see that one, Shane. I know that's the popular rumor, but it just seems like every time there's a damn coaching change at Arkansas, Gus Malzahn gets brought up, and I understand all the history there, but I just don't see those sides ever getting together and, you know, jumping from SEC West school to SEC West school. I just think that's a messy situation. I'm not sure Gus is going to want to get involved in something like that, but hell, I'll tell you what, Shane, if, you know, Auburn says, hey, we're going to fire you unless you find another job, if I'm Arkansas, I would jump at Gus Malzahn. I don't really think he would be interested in making that move, but if he did, Arkansas could do a hell of a lot worse than Gus Malzahn. I know Gus, you know, some people call him out, but he's got a hell of a track record in the SEC West. He's beaten Nick Saban multiple times. He's beaten LSU. I mean, he's beaten all the big boys. He's been to a national championship. I don't think you could do a lot worse than old Gus Malzahn.
Absolutely. And let me ask you, since we're talking, we're just spitting some names out here. Do you think, well, first off, let me ask you this one, because I don't think it's going to be a coordinator. You know, a lot of times when you have a coaching situation like Morris, somebody doesn't have as much experience, you kind of see polar opposite. Mm-hmm. Do you see any of these old ball coaches coming in? Les, you know, is a name I've seen floating around. Even some of the old Arkansas former coaches. Do you think it's a possibility of one of those guys coming back?
No, I really don't. I don't think Arkansas will go down that route.
All right. I just love talking about coaches, man. I love coaching search.
Well, we'll have plenty of time to get all into all that in the weeks to come. But we still got some action here, Shane. And I know you didn't want to talk about this one, but damn scrappy appies got us both, man. Appalachian State marches into Columbia, somehow beats South Carolina 20-15. Drops the big orange Vols lock of the week to 1-11 all the year. And man, what a damn, this was just a sloppy ass game by South Carolina. Got dominated on the line of scrimmage by a smaller team. I do not understand how that happened. South Carolina 27 rushes, finished with 21 yards. I mean, that's despicable.
Absolutely.
That should never happen. Appalachian State, rewatched the game Sunday morning. They came away. They were the better team, Shane. South Carolina making mistakes. And I know it's Sunday evening, Shane, and South Carolina just dropped another pass. I think they had, you know, 7 or 8 drops in this damn game. Could not get that going. That's something that's plagued this team in years past. It's resurfaced. Ryan Helinski, another not-so-good game, 32-57. He did have 325 yards, but when you throw it 57 times, it's going to happen. Had a game-winning touchdown there. He completely sailed it. I mean, this was a damn nightmarish game. Gamecock fans, once again, Shane, they were ready to fire Will Muschamp about a month ago. They were ready to keep him forever after the Georgia game. Now they're ready to fire him again.
I know, man. Isn't it crazy? You got the South Carolina Gamecocks, a team that went down to Georgia and beat Georgia University. And then we may get the coach fired before the season's up. I mean, can you believe that? That's like crazy to me. I mean, this team's, first off, I apologize, Gamecock Nation. I know a lot of people are saying, I came out and said, I promise I'll never pick South Carolina again this year. And some of them are like, no, please do, because we want Muschamp fired, you know. So I feel bad because, you know, this game, first off, was just so ugly. Like you said, I mean, South Carolina was averaging less than 1 yard per carry, per rushing attempt, you know? And we were just pumping up how great this South Carolina rushing game is. I mean, it's been multiple running backs popping up. And when I thought Rico came back, I said, hell, this is an easy one, you know? But how many yards did they have? 27, you said?
21 on 27 attempts.
Golly, man. I mean, that's, you can't have that. You can't have that against any team, especially Appalachian State, that loves to run the clock, and they were able to do so, man. They did. They had their way with South Carolina. Of course, now, South Carolina was banged up. There was a lot of injuries. You know, Shy didn't get to play. Brian left the game several times. Mm-hmm. You know, they were banged up, but still, there is 21 four- and five-star recruits on that South Carolina team, and there are zero four- and five-star recruits on Appalachian State's team. So the talent is on South Carolina's side. The game was not – I mean, and it wasn't even a ball game, man. It was embarrassing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if not for a late touchdown, I mean, this thing would have been even worse for South Carolina. Just a really bad showing once again for Will Muschamp. I understand the frustration, Shane.
Do you fire him?
They're not going to win, man.
They're not going to win against Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. They're not going to beat Clemson. They're not going to make a bowl game. Do you fire Coach Muschamp?
This is a very unpopular opinion I've come to find out on Sunday. I think you give Will Muschamp another year, given all the issues there with, you know, the injuries and the quarterback going down. And this is something I was talking to someone about on Sunday. You know, we always call for these freshman quarterbacks, particularly when they're highly touted like Helinski. Get him on the field. That's going to be what turns it around. This is why coaches don't want to play these guys, because they're so inconsistent. And towards the end of the season, I mean, he's probably never played a season like this, you know, where he's playing caliber of these opponents week in, week in, week in. Mm-hmm. And we see it where last week, I thought he played one of his better games. And then here we go. He I don't want to say he threw up an egg, but he's throwing a pick six. He's missing the game-winning touchdown. I mean, this is what comes with playing a freshman quarterback. And I'm not putting it all on him, because I think he's shown enough to show he's a hell of a player. But I think the reality is they needed Jake Bentley. I don't think Helinski was fully ready for this season to come in. And I know this is Appalachian State. I'm not making excuses here, but it's just a rough year. And I tried to point it out this way. We didn't want to see Chad Morris return, because mm-hmm. we're seeing nothing from them.
Yeah.
You look at Vanderbilt, they're losing to UNLV. I mean, we'll get to the Florida game in a minute, but they just lost 56-0 to Florida. I mean, at least with Muschamp's teams, I know he's not going to make a bowl more than likely this year, but he's made a bowl game every year before. You know, he's beaten Georgia. He's challenging Florida. He's beaten Tennessee every year until this year. It's not like I'm not saying he's the greatest coach, but he's not Chad Morris, Derek Mason bad. You know what I mean? He's somewhere in the middle, and I think he's going to be on a very, very hot seat next season if they bring him back. But I know everyone is always eager to make the change. But what happens if you hire the next damn Chad Morris? I mean, look at Tennessee. They made bad hire after bad hire. Look at Alabama before they got Nick Saban. It was bad hire after bad hire. You can destroy your program a lot quicker than you can build it if you make the wrong hire. And in today's day, I mean, if you make one wrong hire, it very quickly spirals down to two, to three, and so on and so forth. So I don't know. If I'm looking at all those things, I think you got to give Will Muschamp one more year. And if there's no progress, then I think you got to let him go. But that's so far down the line. I'm not ready to give up on a guy that just beat Georgia. This is the only team that's beaten Georgia. So he's not clueless. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And unless you got a surefire ringer just ready to come in, I think you're right. I don't think you pull the trigger, because trust me, man, you know, Dooley set us back so far. And I mean, he didn't even sign that last class. He didn't even have an offensive lineman. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You think that didn't hurt? Hell yeah, it hurt, because finally when we did get linemen, they're all true freshmen, you know? So yeah, I don't know. It's just, I'm with you, but they are spending a lot of money up there, man. The expectations are getting higher in South Carolina. And the fact that you did beat a team like Georgia, that fuels the fire. And how can you – I mean, you beat the University of Georgia and not going to make a bowl game. I mean, man, I'd be upset too. I'd be ready to get rid of my coach. And at this point, you may be saying, what do we have to lose? You know, we're not making bowl games anymore. Might as well take a shot on getting somebody else in here.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's kick it over to Muschamp, Shane. After the game, he was pretty somber, as you can imagine. He's facing these tough questions Let's kick it over here, and then I got one final thought on this one.
You mentioned the running game struggles. Just the offensive line seemed to be getting no push at all.
We had no push. They outnumbered us in the box, and we were inefficient throwing the football when we needed to early in the game.
How can that get repaired in the next 3 weeks?
I mean, we've run the ball well in, other than three ball games, and we've lost all three games in those situations because we don't have a second pitch. I mean, we run it and create some things, but we've got to be more efficient. We got to be able to run the ball. Knew it going into the game.
When you looked at film, did you think you'd be able to run the ball against these guys?
We felt good about being able to run the ball, and we didn't.
Do you feel like you need to make any offensive coaching changes?
Right now, we just need to be more productive, and not at this time. We're inconsistent in personnel and what we've got to be able to do. It's a little bit unfair out there right now, you know. So we're struggling in a lot of ways as far as those things are concerned. But we need to be more productive.
You kind of mentioned it already, but just how much of the offensive struggles were scheme things that you were doing wrong, or was it just execution or poor or lack of consistency for
Well, I think you got to look at everything across the board. I mean, we have some inconsistencies as far as personnel, which is obvious outside, and then we just didn't do a good enough job up front blocking in the run game to create some run game for us, you know. So we need to go back and evaluate what we thought was going to be good going into the game, because obviously it wasn't, and then go back and figure out, why we didn't get as much movement up front as we did. I mean, we got stalemated on the line of scrimmage by a smaller defensive line. So those are things we've got to evaluate.
Are you limited on what you can do offensively right now because of personnel? I mean, you mentioned you don't have a second pitch. Do you not have a second pitch because you don't have people who can run the second pitch because of injuries? Or do you just, this is what you would do even if you had your personnel?
No, I mean, I think that it's been frustrating when Ortre and Chavis Dawkins and Shai Smith, the three, guys that have been starters for us. And they're not in the lineup right now. Xavier's a true freshman. He's doing a really good job. He's playing a bunch of snaps. And Brian obviously is playing extremely well. And we've got to have some more guys step up. I think we'll get Shai back next week. I think we'll get Ortre and Chavis back next week. That's what I'm hoping for. But, I felt like there's a chance they might have been back this week. We got to get them back.
All right, Shane. I know, like I said, I'm sure this is an unpopular opinion in Columbia right now. I would bring Muschamp back, but I would say he's got to make a change at offensive coordinator. I think that's kind of a given. He's got to make some kind of change because this is not getting it done. It doesn't seem like they have much answers on offense. And like I said, I know they're playing a true freshman, but it's just been so inconsistent with the running game. I think you got to shake something up there. And I think it starts with a coordinator change.
Yeah, because – I mean, golly, next year. I mean, I know he's coming back, but Edwards is gone, right?
Yeah, Smith, he's a senior.
Is Shai going? Is there a chance he comes back? I don't know if he's.
I think he'll be back for another year, yeah.
Okay, I didn't know if he's been kind of flirting with it, but, I mean, some of your biggest weapons aren't going to be there next year, so I don't know. Sometimes it's now's a good time maybe to clean house, so I don't know. I'm with you. They've got to do something. They've been pumping up this coordinator for 2 years now, and he's done. It's been garbage. So, I mean, the fact that you only got 21 rushing yards is a joke. I mean, just an absolute joke. 27 attempts, 21 rushing yards. I mean, let that sink in. Big SEC offensive line. You can't get 100 yards rushing.
It's rough. All right, Shane, let's jump on down to Athens, where Georgia took care of business here. And this was a damn ugly one from the moment that Kelly Bryant unable to go. I thought he was going to be playing in this one, but once Georgia got about 7 points on the board, they could have just shut this thing down. Because old Taylor Powell, Shane, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but he just didn't have it in this one, a replacement for Kelly Bryant from Missouri. This offense was totally ineffective. And it's probably, I may be saying that wrong, it probably has more to do with Georgia's outstanding defense. I mean, they continue to impress. This may be the best defense at this moment in the SEC. I know they're leading in a lot of categories, but thoughts on this one, Shane? Lawrence Cager continues to step up big for the Bulldogs. They've got to be happy they got him. I mean, I do not know where this passing game would be without Cager. Of course, he got hurt in this game, did not return. We're going to get a little bit into that here in a moment, but that, I mean, if he's out, they say he's not going to be out, but if he's out, I mean, that's significant for this Auburn game. George Pickens, I mean, he started to flash in this game. That's kind of why you get a guy like this where, you know, we talk up all these coaches, Shane, but it's these players that win the game. It's players like George Pickens. You get the ball in his hands, he makes something happen. He was making it happen here against Missouri. They had no answer for George Pickens at times. You know, Jake Fromm had a solid day, 13 of 29, 173 and two touchdowns. But once they put up a couple scores, this thing was over. I mean, Missouri only threatened about one time in this game, and they didn't even get in the damn end zone. So this is just this was just a thrashing here by the Bulldogs.
What an ugly game, though, man. Unless you love defense and field goals, this was not a fun game to watch. I mean, there was some flashes, like you said, seeing Pickens make some amazing catches. But other than that, maybe a couple of good swift runs, it was still
guy I forgot to mention, Shane, I wanted to give this guy a shout-out, Richard LeCount, the safety. I think he's playing the best football of his career. I think he's going to be all SEC this season. He's deserved that. He's not always been, you know, the best player in Georgia's secondary, but I think he is now, and just wanted to give him a shout out there.
Yeah, and since we're talking about individual players here, what about injuries, man? I mean, I know Cager got banged up, but so did the entire offensive line. Is any of those guys threatened moving forward because they got a big game coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of in flux at this moment. I know that we're shaking guys in and out of the lineup. That's the thing with Georgia, though, that's so, you know, why I was so high on them. I know you were too. When you got eight or nine guys you can rely on, you lose two of them. They have worked these guys. Sam Pittman's a master of that offensive line. He's just shuffling them in and out, moving them into different positions, and they're still, I mean, there's almost no loss there. So, yeah, it's getting dicey down there with the injuries on the offensive line. But I think as long as they got a five healthy, ready to go, of course, the way you said it there, they are playing Auburn, who's got a monstrous defensive line. The game may come down to the trenches there. And if Georgia's not at full strength, you know, they could lose to Auburn.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, Georgia, sneakily, if that's even a word, I'm going to make it up if it's not. But I'm telling you, these guys, their defense is legit. I mean, Georgia hasn't given up more than 17 points in any game this season. You know, they've had several shutouts this season. They're just, nobody's talking about them like they were with Florida or like they were with Alabama at times or even Auburn, you know, the team that they're about to go against. And they're going out there, they're getting the job done, and they're getting the victories. And they're sitting there 8-1. They're right there on the outside looking in on the playoffs, but their destiny is in their hand and their control. And it's going to start next week when they go to Auburn. And this may be even an uglier game, man. It may be a 9-6 game. You know what I'm saying? It may be all defense and field goals, but I am a little bit more excited that some sort of weapons have emerged on Georgia, you know, especially with Pickens. If Cagers comes back, I think, you know, we build off that, you know. It can't be a one-dimensional team. They've got to have some threats on the outside, and he's shown, man, dude, he is freaking talented when he gets the ball in his hands.
Well, let's kick it over to Kirby Smart, Shane, who talked about the injury and the status of Cager moving forward on the freshman George Pickens. And then this game was kind of so dull, they're already asking him Auburn questions. So Kirby gave us a little slight window into what he sees in the Tigers.
I think Cager will be fine. He bothered his shoulder again, but we think he's going to be fine. Probably could have came back if he had to. And then the other guys, I think, are fine. We got Trey with an ankle. Kay was fine. He could have came back in. And I don't know who else. Isaiah's fine. He's fine. But George did a good job. I mean, if he got on the ball, he'd add two touchdowns.
Is this a case with Pickens of, you know, improvement throughout the year led to something like tonight, or was it more of just opportunity and matchups?
He's getting better. I mean, I think everybody on our team's getting better. I thought that the way they played us, it opened up a lot of one-on-one opportunities, but you can't, I mean, we got a lot of long foul balls tonight too. and you got to hit some of those. You got to hit them at a higher rate to make them count. And he's one of our guys that we think can win outside.
What do you want to see George improve in going
forward? Consistency. Playing with his mind in the right place and just doing the little things right. Attention to detail is what gets George, just like you saw tonight. I mean, as talented as he is, if he doesn't have attention to detail, he can hurt the team. Or if he does have attention to detail, he can really help the team. He's got to do those things right, but he's talented and he loves the game. That's what I love about him. He loves the game of football. They got a great program. Gus does a tremendous job. Got a lot of respect for the way they play. A physical football team, great defense, really good young quarterback, really hard offense to prepare for. You know, just I've seen Gus and I have seen a lot of each other over the years, and. Got a lot of respect for their program, and I know they'll be ready to play coming off an off week.
All right, Shane, so let me ask you this. We got a, you know, this is going to be the game of the week next week, Auburn hosting Georgia. I'm not asking you to make a pick here, Shane, but, I mean, how realistic do you think it is that, you know, Auburn beats the Bulldogs?
Very. Because if you think about, this is what concerns me with Georgia. If you think about the teams that have beaten the University of Auburn, okay, it's Florida and it's LSU.
Mm-hmm.
And they both didn't do it on the ground. They did it through the air. And that's something that Georgia hasn't had to do and hasn't, you know, shown that they really can do, that they're capable of, you know. Right. When it did become a little bit of a shootout with South Carolina, you saw how that thing turned out. You know, they should. I just, this is what concerns me when we started the season and we just went to this ground and pound and this, you know, coach talks about this not being a flashy offense and you wear them down. Yeah, but you're going to have some weapons. You're going to have to, you're going to have to get Fromm. Fromm is a great quarterback. You know, give him opportunities. Let him get the ball out. Let him. And they didn't do that. They didn't stretch. They just kept doing with what was working. The problem, though, when you get to a team like Auburn that's got a big, nasty defensive front, and if they're able to slow that running game down and force Fromm to throw, what happens? We don't know because it's never been – they've never been put in that situation. So I am concerned.
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane, sticking in the SEC East, let's jump on down to Gainesville where – whew. The Gators opened a can of whoop-ass there on Vanderbilt, 56-0. And, I mean, I got to be honest with you, Shane. I did not think the Gators even played up to their full potential because the first quarter, scoreless. They were making some mistakes, Trask threw an interception. And then from there on out, Shane, I mean, whew, they just destroyed them. And Dan Mullen, he had no intention of letting his foot off the gas. He was throwing deep. With a minute left in the game, scoring touchdowns. Got they basically emptied the bench, though. So, you know, it was not a total dick move or anything. I think he just wanted to get a lot of his younger guys some experience. But I can't imagine I can't imagine Derek Mason was too thrilled with that.
Dude, that was a total flex, man. That was – I mean, come on, dude. He aired it out. It was like a 40-yard bomb. Even though it's with the backups, you're still throwing the ball in the games in control, you know. Mason probably wasn't even playing any type of prevent defense because he just figured Florida would run the clock out, you know. Next thing you know, they scored another touchdown. So, no, this was oh, man, this reminds me of – oh, man, I don't want to get down history lane, but it's just you got to be careful. And I'm not saying that Vanderbilt's going to rise up and be a powerhouse one team one day, but, you know, these teams don't forget this, you know, and there's going to be a time when you're going to wish that you didn't do this to a certain team. Now, I'm not saying, again, that Vanderbilt will ever beat Florida, but – they obviously have in the past, you know what I'm saying? So, man, this was a hell of a game. And honestly, the closest one I got to predicting right, you know, I even texted you and I said, here we are. It's 3 minutes to go. They're going to kick this field goal so they don't shut them out. And I've about been perfect with this score, but then he goes wide left and they end up scoring another touchdown at the end. So, oh, poor Vandy. Let me tell you, Let me ask you something about Vanderbilt. They're reeling, brother. I mean, they're absolutely reeling. I think they only crossed the 50-yard line twice in this game. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know everybody's looking at Arkansas. Coach Morris is fired. But, you know, do you not think that Vanderbilt – I mean, you've got all them arrows on. You do those power rankings, and I always see Arkansas way down there and then all these arrows and stuff like that. But don't you think Vanderbilt's getting a little closer to that?
Oh, yeah, they're in the danger zone, Shane, no doubt. And, I mean, they got – the key game for Vanderbilt, I hate to say it, could be that ETSU game. They dropped that one. Yeah, obviously, I think you got to let Mason go. Let's see how they finish out here. They got Kentucky and Tennessee. Not saying, you know, those are necessarily going to be wins for Vanderbilt or anything, but you got to have at least a showing in those games. Can't be getting beaten 50-0 like you did here against Florida's, Florida's a top 10 team. So
yeah. it's a little bit different animal,
you know.
I mean, I thought Keyshawn ran hard, but they just couldn't do anything else, you know?
Mm-hmm. Kyle Trask, 363 yards. I think I heard someone say this is the most since Tim Tebow's finale. 11 Gator receivers caught passes, Shane. Let's kick it over quickly here to Dan Mullen here on his team responding after that Georgia loss.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, could you kind of sense this week that this was going to be not your typical, you know, bad bounce back week?
Well, no, I thought we came out. Obviously, like I said, you know, last year after that, you know, losing that game, I thought to Georgia, we came out. I thought we had a pretty good week of practice, and then we just came out late in the egg. But, you know, to this day, I always say this. You know, I mean, I know I say that, but, you know, we all played a Missouri team that played an unbelievable game with a lot of talent, NFL quarterback and all that, a bunch of NFL players on defense. But we didn't play very well. And they played very well, and then we got crushed. I thought this week in challenging our guys, the intensity starting Monday, to come out, you know, and play with a little chip on our shoulder, play a little, you know, I mean, that competitive nature. I want to go out there and play. I want to go out there and win. And I thought we had that, and I thought, you know, that's all we talked about. We talked about coming in, and it can't just be within our preparation. It has to be, also has to lead to our, translate to our performance on the field to play with a little edge and a little chip on our shoulder, and I thought we did that.
All right, Shane, if I'm a Gator fan, this is exactly what you want to see. No let up. They got another game coming up against Missouri, and they got to see more of the same, because if they keep whipping ass like this, they're going to go to the New Year's Six. Mm-hmm. And it's not the college football playoff, Shane, but it's the next best thing, and that's where the Gators are headed if they keep it up.
Yeah, they're there, man. I mean, they're cruise control right now, and I can't see any team – on their schedule that they're not going to have a double-digit favorite lead. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane, final game on the docket here. We can do this one quickly. Ole Miss beats New Mexico State 41-3. John Rhys Plumlee, Shane, he was a machine in this one. 127 yards passing, 177 rushing, 2 touchdowns. The Rebels rushed for 447, 5 touchdowns. This is what you imagine of a Rich Rod offense. And how about this stat, Shane? No freshman in Ole Miss history has rushed for more yards than John Rhys Plumlee or scored as many rushing touchdowns. And he didn't even start the year playing, and he's a damn mm-hmm. quarterback. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just pretty bizarre, but the Rebels really took care of business. This is what you want to see. We could have been in a similar situation as Chad Morris here if Matt Luke would have lost this game somehow, but, of course, the exact opposite, and they just destroyed him. This is what you have to see when a lower-tier team comes into an SEC stadium. You got to run them off the field, and that's what Ole Miss did here, and at least that's a positive. Maybe get some momentum going because they still got 2 big games here.
I think old Plumtree is the best athlete in the SEC. I say that because if you remove him from this scenario, the Ole Miss scenario, the Ole Miss doesn't have a shot to win any game the rest of the season. I mean, that's just – it's not – well, I don't want to say any game. They probably could have won this one because it's a garbage team. But it's just amazing what he's been able to do for that offense. I mean, he is a difference maker, and that's what a true MVP is. You know, somebody that if you remove from the situation, what kind of team do you have? And I just think he's that big of a difference for Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane, that's all I got around the league. You want to do quickly here, guess the opening lines for week 12?
Oh, yeah, I didn't even send you those.
I know.
Okay, all right, let's just do it on the fly.
All right, Shane, let's start with South Carolina at Texas A&M. What do you got for that one?
I'm going to favor Texas A&M by 15.
Ooh, that's exactly what I said, Shane. So we tie here. Aggies favored by 10.
Oh, okay.
LSU at Ole Miss. Who do you like there?
Just talked up Plumtree, but it's not enough. I got LSU favored by, on this one, we'll say 17 and a half.
Ooh, I got this one, Shane. I said 20, and the Tigers are favored by 21 on the road. I think I know it's early, but I'm kind of leaning towards Ole Miss there. Tigers coming off a big game and playing on the road, you know?
I think a little more conservative play calling, too.
Mm-hmm. Kentucky at Vanderbilt. Who do you like in this one?
I like Kentucky, man. And I got Kentucky, let's say 11.
Ooh, you got this one, Shane. I thought only three. I didn't think they'd give Kentucky a lot of respect. It opened at 8.5, so just slightly over a touchdown there.
Okay.
Florida at Missouri, Shane. Who you got here?
Florida at Missouri. Oh, Florida. And I've got them, let's say Florida again. I think this is it's at Missouri. Let's say 12.5.
Ooh, that's right kind of where I was at, Shane. I said Florida 13.5. This was probably the most stunning line. Florida only favored by 5.
Oh, wow. That's okay.
We might have to make a lock.
Damn, here I just said they're going to be double. Are they assuming Kelly's going to be there?
I think that has to be it, you know?
Yeah.
Alabama at Mississippi State.
Alabama, and I'm going to say by 19.
Ooh, I got this one dead on, Shane. I said 21, and that's what it is, 3 touchdowns. Final game on the docket here, Shane. This was pretty surprising. Georgia at Auburn. Who do you like in this one?
Georgia at Auburn. I'm going to go Georgia, but I'm going to go 4.5.
Ooh, you got this one, Shane. I said 8. I thought they'd be at least a touchdown favorite. Georgia only favored by a field goal at Auburn. So that's going to be a damn barn burner, you know what?
Yeah. It's going to be the total opposite of Alabama LSU. I'm telling you, it's like a defensive score is going to win this game, Mike.
All right, Shane, so we went a little long on this one. That's all I got. You got anything before we hop off here? Any last words to Chad Morris or anything?
Chad Morris, it's been fun. You know, I enjoy your clippings, you know, from hunting in tree stands with no bullets and, you know, unacceptable. I mean, there's been some, you remember he used to wrestle around with his players on the field and, man, it was good times. We were going somewhere and then linemen started getting hurt. But, you know, anyway, I'm not going to miss the quarterback controversy in Arkansas. I'll tell you that right now. Mm-hmm. But there was some good things, and I enjoyed his Southern drawl. And I think he'll be on, Saban's staff before you know it, another assistant fetching coffee.
Him and Willie, man. They'll be down there cutting up film down there.
I love it. So, yes, that's the another thing real quick. I apologize again to the Gamecock fans. Appreciate all the Kentucky fans that thought they had an opportunity to beat the Big Orange Nation, but they just weren't able to do it. Big Orange Nation. We don't even go that, but we're starting to steal their letters. So one other thing, too. Appy State, man. I promise to call you App State. You guys earned that, just like that $900,000 check you received. And do you know who they're playing next week? Just fun fact.
No idea.
Georgia State.
So, I wonder, perfect.
Who's buying the beer after that game, Mike?
All right, Shane, I think that's a perfect spot to jump off there. Thanks for joining me as always. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
See you guys. Go Balls.
Man, how perfect is that?